This ship had been tied up in May of 2017, waiting to be scrapped. It was put into a what was a relatively tight pier place, because within that pier there were two or three other large drill ships right across, I guess, the pier, you know, on the adjacent pier. Not a lot of room in that area to maneuver. But as they, you know, famous last words, what could go wrong? The ship was tied up with what was probably inadequate mooring, with the hope that, you know, this hurricane's probably not going to hit this location. But the owner decided, well, we should probably boost up the mooring equipment. So they got it up to 68 miles per hour, which is, as you all know, well below, you know, the wind speed for a hurricane that could hit Port Aransas. As we got into August, hurricane season, they realized that there was a hurricane out there that could, first it was a tropical storm, it was going to hit Mexico, and then within about a week to 3 days notice, they realized that this tropical storm became a Category 2 hurricane and was about to hit South Texas.
And that's a good point, Jim. In the days leading up to Hurricane Harvey making landfall, the forecasts were all over the map. They were pretty erratic, anything from making landfall in Mexico until we get up close to August 25th, and it starts to become pretty clear that they've got a problem. And that problem was compounded by the drill ship owner sort of not really having a formal plan on how they would evacuate their ships in this type of situation. It was kind of done in a very ad hoc manner. And that was problematic because they essentially waited until about the last day that they could move it. And at that point, the Coast Guard shut down the port, basically said no more outgoing traffic, and we were stuck. That led to them hiring a tugboat company to send out two tugs to help secure the ship during the storm, and that didn't go as well either.
No. In fact, our good colleague who represents the tugboat company is here, who just tried the case. He may have some comments on our presentation. But during the 3 days up to the hurricane arriving, they kind of went to the garage there at the pier, found some old ropes and lines, and kind of, I mean, I'm being sarcastic, but they did what they could using old equipment to lash this huge drill ship to the pier. With varying degrees of strength in these ropes and lines to moor the vessel to the pier. They did hire the one and only, probably the best tug company in the Port Aransas area, and they hired two tugs to push or to hold this ship into the pier. The problem was that the tugs really couldn't maneuver in that area, and if the ship broke loose, literally all hell was going to break loose. And of course, you know, the ships arrive at 7 o'clock in the evening before, or the tugs arrive 7 o'clock in the evening before the hurricane really hit. By 11 o'clock, things are starting to heat up. The tugboat owners or the captains can't even see the ship anymore. It's raining so hard, and the next thing they know, the ship is moving and the tugs are moving right along with the ship. The ship breaks away from the pier, kind of goes across the mooring, crashes into the two adjacent ships, sinks one tug, severely damages another tug, and then decides to go out in the channel and hit an island that's a mile away from the pier.
And this is kind of the wrinkle in the case, because it actually was stationary for what, approximately 72 hours. Is that correct?
Right.
And so the ship was stationary, and then whenever the currents and the tides began changing, it sort of refloated, started floating back and struck the pier. So you had definitely a period where the ship was just sort of beached and on its own. There was an issue in the case about the drill ship owner asking the tug company to send a third tug out to monitor the ship, but there really wasn't clear communication as to what that monitoring would actually consist of. And as a result, you had the ship refloat, crash into the pier, and that ultimately formed the basis of the subrogation claim. The owner of the pier tendered their damages to our clients, the subrogated carriers, who ultimately paid on this claim. It was approximately $2.7 million for damage to the pier. We then initiated the subrogation action against the drill ship owner, the tug company, and the owner of the port. And the first big issue with any of these cases, as all of you know, is the Limitation of Liability Act. And that was filed fairly quickly, and that sort of kicked off the litigation.
So, and then one of the issues is a relatively minor issue, but in any maritime case, we had multiple potential owners and operators of this vessel. And I think we got it down to five entities, of which one was the title owner, one was the operator, one was the parent company of all of these, and one of these actually signed a master charter agreement with the tug company. So it's just one of the preliminary issues that I found in this in a maritime case, where you have to figure out who's the real owner, who has the deep pocket, and who can pay for the damage caused by this vessel, which, you know, took about a year to sort out, I think.
And of course, the drill ship owner, in filing the limitation action, was of course seeking to limit their liability exposure to the post-casualty value of the vessel and cargo, which, as Jim's alluded to, was nominal when you compare it to a $2.7 million subrogation claim. So to give you sort of the context of subrogation and how it arises, typically it can come about by what's called equity or by contract. And most insurance policies will contain a provision within the policy which addresses subrogation. And it'll essentially provide that to the extent we issue payments to you, the policyholder, we will be subrogated to all of your rights or causes of action to the extent of the amount of money that we've paid.